Does a soldier's life change after he or she sustains a combat injury? We'll find out on Weekday. From 94.9 KUOW Seattle, I'm Marcy Silman. Thousands of American soldiers have sustained serious injuries and survived the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Some experts say that unlike past armed conflicts, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan kill fewer Americans than they permanently wound. What does a serious injury mean to a soldier's future in the military or in civilian life? We're joined today by three American veterans who were wounded in action. First, Lieutenant John Arthur was deployed with the 423rd Infantry, 5th Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division. I told you there were a lot of numbers. In July of 2009, he was injured by a suicide bomber in Afghanistan in August of that year. He's trying to stay in the military. He is assigned to Joint Base Lewis-McChord. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, ma'am.
This is in alphabetical order, by the way. Sergeant Christopher Hoyt joined the Army in 2005, deployed to Iraq in 2007 with the 2nd Infantry Division, 4th Brigade at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. He was hit by an improvised explosive device, an IED, during a dismounted patrol. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, ma'am.
And last but not least, Captain Jeremy McGuffey, assigned to the 81 Cavalry, 5th Striker Brigade in 2006. He was deployed to Afghanistan in June 2009, where he was wounded 2 months later by an IED detonated beneath his vehicle. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you,
Marcy. I kind of briefly summarized your situations, but I want to start back before the injuries with each of you. I'm curious as to why you joined the military, what kind of expectations you had, and then we'll talk a little bit about what led up to the injury. And since I introduced you last, Captain, we'll start with you.
Roger. So I attempted to enter the Marine Corps, and they eventually said, I'm sorry, your vision is just too bad. I had very bad eyes at the time.
Oh.
So I went upstairs, went to the Army ROTC, and they were more than happy to take me, and they even fixed my eyes for me eventually.
Wow. So you have been in the military since that time, 10 years.
At that point, I was an ROTC cadet. I would say that I've been in the military 4 years.
And you were thinking, this is your career?
Yes.
First Lieutenant Arthur, you nodded. Were you also an ROTC?
I was, ma'am. I went to Virginia Military Institute in Virginia, and you're an ROTC cadet there.
And what attracted you?
To be honest, Marcy, it's been a family profession for a long time. Ever since a young age, that's kind of what I was raised to do, and that's what I wanted to do. I was an Army brat. I lived on military bases.
And Sergeant Hoyt?
I actually started my military career with the Marine Corps, and really that decision came about in around August of 2000 after the USS Cole had gotten bombed, and that was an event that really struck me, and I kind of saw some storm clouds on the horizon. I said, told myself, I'm not going to be the guy that sits back and just lets these kinds of things happen.
When I hear combat or when I think about war, that's something that seems scary to me. Was it something that any of the three of you were scared about or concerned about?
Well, Marcy, I would say nobody is exactly thrilled about going into combat, but at the same time, we know that there's missions to be accomplished and there's a particular reason why we get sent to different places.
Lieutenant Arthur?
I wouldn't say scared, but I mean, everyone's going to be nervous about heading into a situation like that, but that's a good thing. If you're not nervous, you're not taking the situation seriously, you don't really understand the ramifications of your actions.
We're talking with three servicemen currently stationed at Joint Base Lewis-McChord, all three deployed in the Middle East, all three injured in the Middle East, and we've been talking with First Lieutenant John Arthur, Sergeant Christopher Hoyt, and Captain Jeremy McGuffey about what led up to their joining the military, and now is when I'd like you to talk a little bit about your own experience being wounded in combat. And I'm assuming these are all recent injuries within the last less than a year. Is that correct? So, not Sergeant Hoyt. Let's start with you. He's shaking his head. No,
I got wounded back in November of 2007. And that was during a dismounted patrol, and there was another unit.
That means you're walking, right?
Right, yeah. We were walking on the ground, and we were actually going to the aid of another platoon. And while we were on the way there, we were walking along the road in a couple of columns on either side of the road. And I was on the right side of the road. They made another column. I was on the left side, and another soldier and myself were in the lead. And that other soldier had stepped on an explosive device. It detonated and took his life instantly. And then I took a big portion of that blast because we were on a very narrow road. I took a whole lot of blast and concussion, shock from that, as well as shrapnel. And so, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, we already had medevac helicopters that were already on station, so I was able to get out relatively quickly.
Were you conscious during that whole time?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny the things that you kind of think about when you're laying there in the road. You know, half my body is numb, and the first thing I think about, well, first of all, I've got to evaluate myself. So okay, I know that I'm conscious because I'm thinking, so I put my thumbs up and let everybody else know that, hey, I'm okay. And so then I start looking for blood and really don't see a whole ton of blood. Fortunately, the shrapnel fragments missed arteries. So I guess where it starts to get funny is when they had to start cutting off my boots. And these were my last pair of good boots, and I was very upset that they were cutting off my boots at the time. Same thing with I was wearing my last clean uniform as well, and I was very angry about that more than anything else.
Captain Jeremy McGuffey, you were also wounded by an IED, and can you tell us what happened?
We were operating in Afghanistan. We were moving out primarily to set up some observation posts, an overnight observation post on a mountain that some of the locals had reported to us that there were Taliban. They like to operate through that mountain, so we're going to go watch it overnight. And as we were moving around the mountain along one of the trails, IED detonated beneath my Striker. Four of us were wounded, two military personnel and two civilian journalists. And a little bit of fuel had gotten on my right arm. The fuel itself causes a burning sensation. Mm-hmm. So I thought I was on fire. So I jumped and didn't jump very well because the damage had crushed both my heels, broken some other bones in my feet, and taken a kind of medium-sized piece off my left leg. So I crawled up under the roof of the vehicle, realized that I wasn't too badly off, and saw the man next to me. He'd lost both his legs, and he was trying to talk on the radio, and I think his radio was dead at that point. So I looked down to find my M4, my rifle, but it had been blown clear and been blown out of my hands, and I found someone's foot instead. And after the detonation, some local Taliban actually did come out of this particular mountain we were driving by. And I remember hearing the AK-47 rounds. They opened fire on us. But we had three other vehicles that were still good, and so one of them returned fire on them.
So that's happening, and you're laying there? Were there medics?
Yes. The medic got there, and they kind of took over. They did a real brief evaluation on me, but I was talking. I was obviously conscious. I'd obviously crawled around. So they just put some pressure bandages on and then called for the medevac and took all four of us out. And that is pretty much the last thing I remember, because at that point they put me on morphine.
Captain Jeremy McGuffey, last Lieutenant Arthur came in. People can't see you, but you use a cane at this point. Tell us your story.
We were in the Zabul province, and we were doing a dismounted a foot patrol. It was a presence patrol through this village of Shijoy. We were supposed to go in there just to get a vibe of the village, so to speak. And we knew the Taliban were watching us, and we knew that they were going to try to hit us. They were bluffing about it, but sometimes they bluff, sometimes they're serious. So we make this right down the main bazaar, and this street is only about 6 feet wide. There's a decent number of people in there, so it's a relatively crowded marketplace in a small area. Being the platoon leader, I often will talk to some of the locals, and I also have antennas coming off of me, and I also have an interpreter close to me, and a radio operator who's close to me also. So it's pretty identifiable that I'm the platoon leader. A suicide bomber stepped out from a shop at my 5 o'clock position. He was about 5 feet from me, and I heard Allah wham, and the explosion hit. A civilian in front of me disintegrated, and I didn't black out during this. And there's just like black debris flying by me on both sides because it blew up near my back. And so my legs fell out from underneath me. My rifle blew out of my hands. I still had my sidearm on my chest, and it hit the ground. And I looked to my right, and I saw a foot in a flip-flop, and that was when I realized it was a suicide bomber. Myself and 11 other soldiers were wounded in this blast, and a decent number of civilians were killed. Usually, over in Afghanistan, if you get hit by an explosion or an IED or something along those lines, there's going to be secondary contact, as Captain McGuffey experienced.
Secondary contact, meaning more attacks.
And so I grabbed the interpreter, And I dragged him about 2 feet behind some concealment, and then I flopped into the ditch. And I couldn't hear anything. My ears were completely wide, blown out. I crawled myself out of the ditch a little bit and into a hut, and I tell the platoon sergeant he needs to establish security, call in the medevac. As we were there, I had jokingly told my medic a while back that I didn't really like tourniquets, and so if he was going to have to put one on, he needed to ask permission. And so he comes running up. He comes up and he's like, "Sir, it's pretty bad." I'm like, "How bad is it?" And he said, "It's bright blood." I was bleeding from my femoral artery on my left leg. I had a large amount of shrapnel blown through. And so he's like, "Sir, I'm going to have to ask permission to put on a tourniquet." I was like, just do it. And so, and it was at that point in time when everything was happening and I was still talking that I realized I felt like a deep pressure inside my chest. And my, turned out I had taken some shrapnel through my chest wall. It had shattered some ribs and collapsed my right lung and damaged my liver and my diaphragm. And then the strikers rolled in, pulled us out of that location. And we rolled back to our base. And there was a physician's assistant there who had requested to be close to the front lines, which was amazing. He was a lifesaver.
We're hearing the stories of three American soldiers wounded in the past few years in Afghanistan and Iraq. We just heard the story of First Lieutenant John Arthur, who was injured by a suicide bomber. And this was just last summer, was it not?
Yes, ma'am. It was August 29th, Marcy.
So August of 2009, also injured last August was Captain Jeremy McGuffey, also in Afghanistan by an IED that detonated beneath his Stryker vehicle.
That is correct.
And then in 2007, Sergeant Christopher Hoyt was in Iraq and was patrolling on foot and was hit by an IED also. So obviously, you're prepared mentally. The military is prepared for you to be wounded as well. So there's this series of services. But personally, what does each of you rely on?
I think one thing that really helped was friends and family. In my case, it was very much family. So, of course, a lot of my friends are still deployed. Mm-hmm. And that was a hard thing to get used to, that you know, all my friends are over there still doing their job, still part of the team working together for that. For the mission, and suddenly I am back here, away from all of them. And that was very hard to get with, get over.
So your goal is to go back into to combat service. What is your goal?
My goal is to remain in the Army. As far as my old job, which was armor, I probably will not be able to do that, just because of the nature of the damage, especially to my left leg. So I'm looking to transfer branches, and right now what I'm actively pursuing is getting to the Inter-Service Army Physician Assistant Program, basically to be trained as a physician assistant for the Army.
Sergeant Hoyt, how long was your rehab?
My rehab ended up being from my initial injuries, November 13th of 2007, until the about mid-January. I was actually released from the hospital and then began conducting physical therapy for about a year and a half. And so at that point, I went ahead and started working towards a reclassification or changing my job in the military. Went and tried to get into the public affairs field.
How much permanent damage have you sustained?
Well, I've sustained a good amount of nerve damage in my lower extremities. I had to get a bone fusion in my heel and ankle. And then also there's just going to be some constant pain that's always going to be there.
What helped you through this process?
For most of the rehab, I took the attitude that I was still fighting the enemy. Everything that you feel that's related to the injury is because of the bad guys, and that's still a fight.
And now we turn to First Lieutenant John Arthur.
My recovery has been pretty long, ma'am. I was at Walter Reed for 4 months, and I was wheelchair bound there. For a while, I couldn't get out of bed for about a month and a half. I had my legs locked up. My right leg was broken, so was my right foot, and I had to have a skin graft on my lower left leg. A lot of nerve damage. I also had double fasciotomies, which is where the muscle begins to swell so much that they have to slit the skin, or else the muscles will constrict off the blood flow, and you'll basically tourniquet off your feet. So they had to put those in, which is I couldn't move with those in, and also I had a chest tube in. And I had to be on oxygen sometime because my lung kept on collapsing. After a while, I wanted to get back to Washington State, so we transferred to the WTB in Fort Lewis. And my wife was able to go back to work. She works in Seattle. And so while I'm here, I'm still going to physical therapy and occupational therapy, and I still have more surgeries scheduled. But I think the original part of your question was what helps you get through it.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And, you know, my family and my wife, definitely. Probably the biggest thing was for me was God. Actually, when I was laying on the ground in the blast and my medic was working on me, one of my soldiers came up and he said, he knew I was a Christian. He said, "Sir, I haven't prayed in a year and a half. Do you mind if I pray over you?" And when he was doing that, I had this voice and it was just, you can either stay asleep and be at peace or stay awake and you'll survive. That's what's really helped me get through most of it.
Are you planning to stay in the military?
I would like to stay in. I'm trying to possibly switch to military intelligence. I'm not sure right now because I have the surgeries. The doctors haven't stated I've reached the point of maximum healing.
I'd like to thank the three of you very much for sharing your stories with me and with the listeners. You just heard from First Lieutenant John Arthur, who still working on his recovery, hasn't reached the point of maximum healing, is that what they call it?
Yes, like Marcy.
The point of maximum healing. Sergeant Christopher Hoyt, who is rethinking what he's going to be doing in the military, but that's your goal as well, I believe, to stay in service.
It's something that is in flux right now. The future is open. I can say that.
And Captain Jerry McGuffey, who's waiting to see if he's accepted into a physician's assistance program, and he'll be changing the nature of his service. Thank you very much, and good luck on that application.
Thank you, Marcy.
I'd like to thank all three of you. This is 94.9 KUOW Seattle.